What's going on with dance and stuff? What's happening with dance and things? What's going on? What's happening? What's going on with dance and stuff?
Here we are. And you've had a full... You're in your final week of school.
Next week.
See? I knew it. I'm psychic.
You did. You knew it.
Your final week of school, and it's next week. I knew it. I can always have, you know, finger on the psychic pulse.
I know. This week at school, I asked one of my classmates who seems very tapped in spiritually if they had any sense of the future. And they were concerned. They saw something upsetting.
They are correct.
It wasn't not an optimistic outlook.
Yes, I share their view. My feeling is it's towards the end of October, and things get worse.
What?
It's in the end of October. I think that COVID's going to just become like totally it's going to get really out of control.
I thought you were saying like it is the end of October.
Through all of 2019, when I would meditate, all I would see was waves of death. So,
you did have a waves of death kind of year. That's for sure.
I really did. And then
you've been in a better mood in 2020, ironically.
Well, isn't it just like melancholia?
Absolute, you know, same.
It's like I'm dragging myself. I'm not okay. And then it's like, here comes the planet and I'm fingering jam out of the jar into my mouth.
Yeah, you felt something coming.
I did. And then I was like, oh, here it is. It was absolutely this massive plague, completely a governmental failure as we torpedo into autocracy and militarized state
incredible
affairs, battling back people trying to have civil rights. And there's such incredible nefarious evil in the White House and working with Republicans. And it's interesting how it, and the way in which the shattered, fractured left really let this walk through the door in the first place.
It really got in there.
Yeah. Yeah. People were like, but her emails. Mm. And it's, well, here you go. For all those people who said, I would rather die than vote for Hillary, here you go. Welcome.
It's now more likely than ever that you in fact will die from not voting for Hillary.
Yeah, isn't that wild? And you know, for those of you who are on the fence about Biden, Angela Davis is voting for Biden, so can you. Because
absolutely.
What more do you know? Do you know than Angela Davis? Are you okay? Do you need to should we stop and take a moment? You have a massive reflux.
No, I just stepped away. I stepped away from the microphone because I just had Oaxacan food and one of the things was very spicy.
Yeah.
And so I just had to have a cough. I had to have a real cough.
It's a lot of clearing and a lot of coughing. And already people are feeling, you know, overwhelmed by people coughing around them. So if we need to take a moment, you need to get some milk and magnesia. It's just kind of like intense. It's an ASMR I don't think many people want, quite frankly, especially now. They don't need the coughing. While you have your spoonful of yogurt, I'll sing up a song. I'll sing a new song, which is hitting the top of the charts soon. And I just made it up tonight. Have you ever flown a stone? Home, baby, oh. Tie a string around a stone. Throw it out the window. If the stone flies, he loves you, baby, oh. If the stone doesn't fly, he doesn't love you, baby, oh.
Wow.
Have you ever flown a stone? Oh, baby, baby, oh, oh, that's the song. And I feel like it's headed to the top of the charts.
The question is Is it Tori Amos? Is it PJ Harvey? From where did that come?
Oh, no, no. Like, this song happened. So there's some... I think he's straight. Cis white male singer who people are, like, falling all over about on Instagram that I have no idea who he is. I couldn't tell you what his name is or anything, but somehow it came across my gram today and I looked at his page and his music sounded like that.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And it kind of just like stuck in my head of like just some sort of mediocrity. So I loved the idea of like, have you ever flown a stone? Oh, baby. Oh.
Oh, wow. So
that's a lot of it. That was...
This person's famous?
So I felt inspired by just... Oh, yeah. This person is like beyond famous. You know, and I just... As people listen to this podcast know, I'm not... I don't... There's not a lot I want to see...
Is it James Blake? I saw James Blake on a commercial for Apple products today.
No. I think I might have seen this guy singing a song for Subway, but it could have been something else.
Subway, eat fresh.
I always hated Subway. Even as a kid, I remember when Subway rolled around and that smell.
It's really...
It's not okay. It's like a certain kind of like lethal bread.
That bread smell is right. Really over... And it wafts from the Subway. So, you know, I was once in a place far, far away, like as far as you can go, called Västerås, Sweden. I mean, and nobody knows where that is, and nobody lives there. And yet, as I walked down a street towards my hotel, there was that smell, and I turned to my left, and there was a Subway.
Wow. They've even found a way to get to Västerås, Sweden.
Yes, really. Rural Sweden has a Subway, so don't worry. You can get your foot-long hoagie.
Ugh, yuck. Something I don't want at all.
Wow. I'm sorry, everybody.
How are you doing?
This podcast is going to have some real audio auditory adventures because I have been stepping away and towards the mic.
Yes. Well, and I can really hear you like shaking the mic and like fingering it.
That microphone, like, that's just for you, Jack. That's not what they're hearing.
Oh, I see. I see. It's just the torture that I get. When you're in class, are your classmates ever like, can you not?
Oh, or no,
like,
I don't do microphone for class.
Oh, you're just muted, so you're able to like blow your nose and like clear your throat and like cough and like.
Occasionally, I'll realize that I haven't been muted for 5 minutes, and then I'll quickly mute. Mm-hmm. And the other day, I wasn't muted for a while, and then I spoke, and I was like, I also just want to say I apologize for not being muted for the last 10 minutes.
Because you were giving them a full throat cacophony?
Well, I'm not really. This is unusual, but I've taken inspiration from and also intuitively shifted and evolved in my Zoom demeanor and decorum. So today in Feldenkrais, you know, it was more a lecture than a practice. And I just laid on the floor with a blanket on and with my eyes closed, but on camera.
That's incredible. I mean, I feel I can't imagine that people in corporate aren't like, I have to lay down for this call or just, they need to find out, there should be a way, like something. So here's the thing, people, if you want to make it, take it. This idea is free for you, where it's something that wraps around your head and then holds the phone in front of your face so that you don't have to hold the phone in front of your face while you talk on it. And if so, just take it.
Basically,
whoever wants to make it, make it.
It basically tapes this radioactive brick to your head, to your skull.
No, it holds it as far away from your face as it is when you're talking to anyone. It's like, you know, if you're on a FaceTime and you have to hold the phone while you're on FaceTime and it's like, God, my hand's tired. I'm exhausted from this. And you're touching the phone that way.
I see.
So this way, at least, you're not even touching it. It slides into some kind of grip that is wrapped, that is a plastic thing that, you know, you can adjust so that it goes around your head and then it keeps the phone suspended in front of your face like a lure or you know, whatever.
A lure. Rest assured, one of the inventors who listens to our podcast, you'll see it on Instagram shortly.
It'll be called The Lure. Yeah. I'm picturing it like, you know, how those fish in the bottom of the ocean dangle that shiny thing in front of their face and then you get closer and they gobble you up in their hideous mouth. It's
that's a lure. That's a bait.
Yeah.
Lure bait.
Yeah, that's what they have. Well, I'm doing pretty good. I'm on day three of my incredible residency at City Center, and it is going well. It's just me and two other choreographers.
Yeah, I'm sorry I didn't ask how you were, but I'm glad to hear about this. Let's hear about it.
Yeah, I'm doing well. I mean, it's wild because City Center's opened up for just three residencies, and it's really wonderful that I was selected, and I can't tell you who the other two were because when we met at the breakfast, we were all in PPE, so it was just like masks and goggles, and it was hard to hear them. But I am working on my new piece, which is called Sarah Mitchelson Mearns, and it is all set to premiere at the Shed. It's a co-production with Radio Shack. And I am really excited about it. As of now, it's a solo, but I'm envisioning it as a probably like 118 person group dance. And it's going to be live. It's going to be virtual. It's going to be live stream. It's going to have a stream. It's
wonderful. Who's gonna moderate your studio rehearsals?
Oh, my studio rehearsals are going to be moderated, pretty sure by a sock puppet. And
wonderful. Yeah. So the sock puppet is gonna have some really
terse words for me. Terse words.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really
terse words from your sock.
Yeah, yeah. An old sock.
Very, very old.
been in a lot of people's foot.
Yeah,
and
totally.
Has some, it's grumpy, but holding me to it. And I'm really excited for the X challenge.
I know. Well, you know, socks hold a multitude of history. And so they will take you to task if you're wrong.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, it's all really exciting, and I'm really excited that you and Harriet are doing the costumes, and I love the designs you guys sent today, and we put it up on the PowerPoint.
Yeah, we were thinking with so many people in such close proximity, we wanted to do something like mass game style North Korea. You know, mm-hmm. we thought it could be really, really beautiful to have opportunity to have so many bodies to dress. We can employ so many different costume shops around the garment district to sew for us.
It's really exciting. Everyone loved the section that's in plastic tubes. Everyone was excited about the plastic tube section. And I was definitely impressed and felt excited and yet enervated because it's incredibly, I'm choosing to walk every day to get there from Greenpoint.
Oh,
and
wow.
That's sort of my warm up. And what's interesting when you get to City Center is they have these, there are those things that you would put like a letter in that would get shot to another place in the building.
Yes, 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 yes. air tubes.
Yeah, I think they're called something. And I'm sure someone will let us know through our email account. And
I think they're called vacuum mail.
Vacuum mail. So it's like that for me and the two other choreographers. We're the only three people in the building. So we just, there's these three separate bronze. They look like a trumpet, and they all have a big wooden cork in it that is locked to it, and we each have a key. So I unlock the wooden cork,
gorgeous.
And then I get in, and then I have to close it and lock it, and then I'm just sucked up into this big studio.
Studio five, where I'm
making the work, and it's really fun to be working with different composers, you know, everyone from like Brahms to Bjork, and everything from a fugue to a rave, and it's pretty cool.
I'm gonna go online shed.com right after this and get my tickets.
Yeah, you can find it at shed.com/
Jack Fervor / Sarah Mitchelson Mearns / : : Radio Shack * and then I think after that, the discount code is 952.
Patreon.com.
Is Patreon, maybe? No, that's ours. This discount code is 952-7834-772-999. And then there's some letters
and
after
what kind
it.
Of discount do you get?
You get a 5-cent discount. And so you get 5 cents off of the billing charge on your tickets. Because all tickets.
Oh, wonderful. Does that also include free coat check? Free coat
no,
check?
No, no. This is just 5 cents off of the $15 billing that happens on the $89 ticket. So it's pretty cheap, though. At the end of the day, right. It ends up still being under $100 for the ticket. And
I love like an $88.95 ticket. Really good.
It's super just affordable and for dance, theater, what have you, which I think is cool. And,
how are you gonna seat people?
All around. I mean, I think it's pretty much all around. Yeah. And it's
great.
Really different,
like
too.
Like on stage.
Yes. And I'm really doing like old Dixon Place style where it's like there's stools and a lazy boy and then there's going to be some stadium seating and
sofas.
Beanbags, beanbag chairs and then literally just like a crate that's filled with beanbags.
A bag of beans.
And then also just a bag of beans. There's also
just a giant bag of beans.
There's also just a giant bag of beans that you can sit on. And that is that, though.
Jack, I literally love for you to do a show where there's just like bags of beans. And I hope you said at the beginning, you say, I'm so glad. I hope you're all enjoying your bean bags. You can say, oh, well, you can be, it'll be like Aval, like at Abrams yet again. And you can be like, you know, I asked the staff to buy me beanbag chairs, but this is all we could afford.
There's no chairs and it's just bags of beans.
No, but they're also just like 1 pound bag of beans and you just get one. They hand it to you with your chicken.
I love it. And I'm like, you know, if you're a real skinny mini like me, you can sit on that.
It's just some nice cushion for your sits bones.
Yeah, it's so good. Nice. I mean, I feel like if you put a bag of beans in the freezer and then put it on your eyes, it would feel totally nice.
Yeah, and it'd make nice sounds during your show. No need to hire a composer when you're using bags of beans.
Bags of beans. I mean, well, that was something that Bjork and I talked about because she was interested in she meant bean bags, but what she meant was bag of beans and
bags of beans.
So it's all kind of part of the mix and like some things, you know, like meat, some things will be covered in trash bags and, you know, it gets very like Beckett towards the end where the sock puppet moderator comes out of a trash can and, you know, it's all exciting. I'm just really excited and I've never felt so excited for live performance that's not happening. And I think it's, it's just really, it's wonderful. It's going to be and when we do it, it's going to be in a completely enclosed, airless, locked room over a span of, you know, it's durational. So it's like a 4-day piece. But I am excited as well for what we have coming up, which is very special, I think, for our listeners for many reasons.
What we have coming up?
Don't you think so?
Oh, our roving reporter? Oh, it's tremendous. You're not prepared for it. Red Rover, send Jeremy right over to Israel.
Rover, something come over.
Were we meant to talk about Mucho Mucho Amor?
So long ago now.
You were really excited about it for a minute.
Well, like 2 weeks ago when I watched.
And you told me to watch and I watched and it was wonderful.
It's incredible. Everyone should watch it. It's really like Walter Mercado is an angel.
He's a future person.
He is absolutely divine. Totally inspiring, inspirational.
And hilarious.
Messenger of love and peace. I mean, that is key to being an angel. Like, How many, like...
Tremendous sense of humor.
Yeah, that's...
That was when I trusted him. I wouldn't have trusted Walter Mercado if he hadn't had some... If he wasn't able to look from afar at what it is he's doing, you know?
Well, he had an objective for love and peace through this medium of, as he says at one point, stupid stuff.
Stupid stuff. I couldn't believe it. That's when I was like, I'm literally in love with you.
But he also had very strong beliefs and convictions and inside of a very polytheistic... Joseph Campbell-y kind of Unitarian vision, which I fully related to. I mean, I really was like, if I had been born in a warmer climate, this could be me. But I was not. It's a story that's really important to watch for many reasons, I think. But primarily, I would say to what kind of how to be a messenger of love and humor and play and theatrics.
Yeah, and also like how to be in this world in a different way than what is conventional. Yeah. And, you know, people for whatever reason chose to accept Walter Mercado. And we, you know, I hope that for all people who want to choose to live on this earth on different paths that people can accept them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Walter Mercado.
Walter Mercado, we love you. We love you.
I really, when I looked at the advertisement for it, I thought, is that Carolina Herrera? You know, that's, it was confusing and wonderful.
Well, and there's that incredible woman who, I can't remember her name right now, where it's like her, you know, everyone gets described as like manager, producer, sisters, and her description is witch. And which I loved. I was like, absolutely, that is the world I want to live in. And I guess I do. And she describes his hair as like this really like great men's hair from the 70s, and also like, you know, your mother's hair. It was really tremendous. I mean, it's talk about like we contain multitudes. It's really
truly
wonderful. I loved it. Please watch it. It's so feel good.
And speaking
good.
Of wigs, I'm also chipping my way through Mrs. America, so we'll be able to talk about that soon.
Great. Loved it. I've moved on into watching the Olympics on the Criterion. So I just finished 16 Days of Glory, which is incredible, which is the LA what? Olympics from 1984.
You're watching documentaries about the Olympics?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. I love that stuff.
Have you seen 16 Days of Glory?
No.
You will love it. I'll send you my Criterion password so you can watch it.
What was the milestone from the 84 Olympics?
Mary Lou Retton.
Mary Lou Retton?
Retton, right. Yeah. Yeah. Research journalism at its finest. You heard it here first. Mary Lou Retton in the 1972 and a half Olympics in Sao Paulo, Brazil.
Amazing.
Jack, no. Pretty sure.
Mary Lou Retton.
Mary Lou Retton.
Perfect
who
10.
Who else? Honey. Greg Louganis.
Oh, that was then?
Oh, honey. When he was like winning the golds and like, and he, I don't want to give it away. Like the story he tells before you watch him do this dive.
That's the Olympics where he hit his head on the thing?
No. I think that's 88 Seoul.
I cannot believe you have this information in your head.
But I couldn't remember Mary Lou Retton, which is exactly what happened when she came on the screen and I screamed, Mary Lou, and I couldn't do it. I couldn't remember
that.
Wait,
I have a question. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you think that the Olympics, because like when I was a young person, they were so important to me. It felt like nothing more magical happens on earth than the Olympics. And then suddenly I completely stopped caring about them.
Completely.
Is that what happens with, so is the Olympics, a children's programming?
I think that I don't know what your story is, but mine is that I didn't have a TV and my life got incredibly hard. And so
we stopped having normal networks.
Yeah, I didn't have TV and my life was also really difficult and I was only watching live performance or seeing weird movies or sometimes like a blockbuster. But I feel that my shift of care, you know, it was just different, you know? And I think,
yeah.
I don't know, like I was like, it switched to like wanting to take in like Karen Finley and Ralph Lemon. And, you know, it's like a really different paradigm. And so what's interesting about watching, and the reason I specifically like these documentaries, which are by Bud, 60 Years of Glory is by Bud, I want to say Greenspan, Weiser? And I could be wrong.
Bud Bundy.
Can you imagine? And what's great is that there's interviews with the Olympians, which is so...
But when they're grown up?
Or like the next year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know, where they're kind of recounting what happened. And it's really... I just think it's really great. Bud Greenspan.
Wow. Well,
is who did it.
Speaking of Ralph Lemon,
yeah.
You can there's an excellent performance that Ralph and Ishmael Houston Jones and B.B. Miller did at the MCA in Chicago
at the Chicago Art Institute.
Yeah, and I think they're extending the stream of it, because I think it was supposed to end a couple days ago, but I think maybe they're extending it.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that it's up. It's, I mean, to have the three of them be together in a space that, I mean, I feel like if you've gone to the Movement Research Gallery, you've had experiences of, you know, of them being in the same room. But to see them perform together is so important.
Yeah, you've had the experience of having Jack Ferber harass you, one or the other.
What is that? at the Movement Research Gala?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Anything can happen at the Movement Research Gala.
And well, the thing that I remember about that work, or the first time I guess I heard about it, was from Tara-Isha Willis, who was the, she's who she's who put it together. And she was one of our cohorts this past year at the library.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, she was the DTW archive.
Correct.
Yeah, she's major. We need to have her on. She's so incredible. Yes. Really, like, one of my favorite people I've gotten to talk to in the last few years. So smart. Anyhow.
Yeah, very. She gives an excellent introduction on this stream at mca.org. I have no idea, but you'll find it.
Yeah, well, we can post about it. And we absolutely need to have Ralph on. I mean, talk about, and Ish, and BB. I mean.
Well, I wrote to Ishmael, because Ishmael really loved our last episode about the Cunningham. And I said, well, maybe you and Ralph and BB are our next trio. Maybe we'll have a round table discussion. That'll be 2 and 5 hours
long. I mean, that's such a five-parter. It is really.
It's a five-parter.
Well, I mean, to get into
it's a lot.
Into each of their bodies of work is... I mean, huge. It's such a... And the impacts that have happened from them, and also their relationship and how long that's been and all of that history. It's amazing. But yes, I agree. That would be incredible.
Okay, I'm sorry. That was a long diversion.
That's all right. It's all right. We're about to get into some field reporting between our very own Jeremy Jacob and Netta Yerushalmi. Ladies and gentlemen, please like, subscribe, rate, review. We're on YouTube as well. For those who are hearing impaired, we now are releasing our episodes on YouTube so that there's text, and you can let people know that. And I have a couple other things to plug in terms of watching. So yes, I'm watching these Olympic things, which are really great. Also, The Last Dance.
Uh-huh.
Michael Jordan, documentary,
what?
Chicago Bulls, incredible.
Oh,
incredible.
Wait. Did you recommend that, or someone else recommended it to me?
I don't know, but it's amazing. I highly suggest people watch it.
I've heard it's amazing.
It is really incredible. And then also Crip Camp. Which
what's that?
It is about a camp that was, well, it's not just about this camp, but it is about people with physical disabilities who meet at this camp and then all end up moving to
the West Coast, really ending up in Berkeley, and then starting really asking for civil rights for people with disabilities, and really getting the Disability Act to come through, and 504. And it's so inspiring. And I think the reason, if I'm to sort of track like what has been my viewership in this, is it's been wanting to see people fighting for things that are just, or fighting to better themselves, or seeking to better things, and to do it with rigor and great passion, and those have been really inspirational. So I highly recommend the Olympic documentaries by Bud Greenspan, starting with 16 Seasons of Glory on Criterion Collection, The Last Dance, which is on Netflix, and Crip Camp, which is also on Netflix.
Great. And I'm just going to plug these dog grooming videos where severely matted dogs get their hair shaved off so that they can be healthy again. So I watch those. They're stressful, but they're, you know, relief at the end.
I want to get a dog.
I know you do.
It'd be really cute. I think it'd be cute. I think I'm going to have two. So they can be friends. All right.
Oh my God. So cute.
Oh, and thank you, Ryan David O'Byrne. I'm loving my book, Indelicacy, by Amina Kane. It is, I'm just speeding through this novel. I haven't read fiction in quite a while because it has, there's been a lot of other things to read. Also, if you were an educator and you want an anti-racist pedagogy reading list, hit me up and I am happy to share that with you. Of a
Wunderbar.
Independent study group that I am in, and I think is important, and it has changed quite a bit since I would say there's a lot of new intel, I think, that is there. So if you've already gone through an anti-racist training and you are interested in how things look now, feel free to hit me up and I will pass on this Google Doc to you.
Very good, Jack. And I think all, you know, forward-thinking curriculums will be changing a lot of their content. So keep looking for it.
Yeah, I think it's
out there.
It's important and it's happening and it's now. Yeah. All right. And on that, let's hear from...
Put your hands together!
Nada, yo, show me!
Wee!
Yay! And... I will talk with you soon, Reed. Do you have any plans of coming back to New York anytime soon?
Yeah, I mean, school's over soon, and then I'm going to start thinking about it.
Okay, all right.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
And I hear you, girl. I hear you.
Yeah.
That's a real 20 minutes at a time.
Yeah. Maybe I'll call you right after we get off the phone.
Okay, sounds good. All right, enjoy.
Okay, bye.
We love you.
Hello, everyone. Jeremy here. I'm about to do some research journalism with a video chat with Neda Yerushalmi. She was a guest on episode 89 of Dance and Stuff, so go back. All right. It's Sunday, July 19th, and it's currently after midnight in Tel Aviv, where Neda is. Let's see how she's doing.
Right.
Hi. Hello. You were just telling me about the corona officers that called you to check up on you when you first got to Israel.
Right.
You've been there about 5 weeks.
Yes.
How long did that mean you were? Does that mean you were in New York? It was like 2 months. Was that like 2 months?
Three months. Middle of March to middle of April. March to April. April
time,
to May. Maybe. So. Yes. 3 months.
Okay. 3 months in the city during the beginning of it. And then.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that actually timeline wise seems like the correct time to have left New York too.
Well, when we were planning to leave, it was also, Israel was just like, woohoo, we got this totally under control and we're opening everything all at once. Here we go. And so we were just like, okay, let's do this. And then since we got here, it just totally went in the other direction, like crazy time.
Yeah. But yeah, similar here, I guess.
In the
I
South.
I
mean, it was, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we'll see what happens everywhere else.
Yeah, I don't think that people here are willing to go back to how the laws or the rules or whatever they were in March. They were so severe. And I think as a general population, they're just unwilling to live in that way. They don't think it's worth it. And so even if the government is now considering ways to inhibit people's socializing activities, the citizens are going to fight back, whether it's because of economical reasons or because they're just like, we're not going to do that thing of like, I'm not going to see my parents. Sorry, we're not going to do that.
Right. Well, part of that is that we were told that if we quarantined, then it would be under control.
Right.
And then we could live again.
Right.
So now that is a squandered dynamic.
Right.
And you know, right. Seeing it here. And it's also a situation in terms of businesses here where it's like, I've just tried to reopen my business, which is an expensive endeavor. And now I'm being shut down again. I have to, I can't do this again. So now I'm out.
Right. 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 But I think, and I don't know if I'm talking out of my, you know, armpit here, but it feels to me like at least and maybe this is a bad thing that there's not some big like long-term overall plan here. It's a very improvised, it feels kind of like patchy in the solutions, but it feels maybe like an experience of like, oh, this is what it's like to live with this in a long-term kind of way, because a lot of life kind of is back to normal I just feel like in New York, I felt like such a distinct, like life is shut down. There are no cars in the street. You know, I'm sure it's a little bit more lively right now with phase two or three or whatever. But it feels right now, like when you walk down the street and the way people are, that it feels like, okay, this is maybe what it's going to be like for a very long time, where people are all the time trying to live. They're trying to do that thing that they know that they want to do. And they're just negotiating, you know, it's like, okay, I'm going to go see my parents this weekend. I just spent 5 days in Tel Aviv, like with a ton of people. And, you know, some of them I know very well and I might trust them. They're very close to me, like, you know, family members or friends. They go to work. They see other people. Right. So then I'm going to go to my parents who live in this like isolated kind of idyllic area, part of the country that feels very safe, I think, to them. And I'm gonna, so my parents are like, yes, of course you should come. Doesn't make any sense.
Right.
So, but this is like, people want to live. They want to see each other.
Yeah.
It's like, none of it makes sense.
And everyone is only counting their direct relationships rather than like taking into account that all of those people have a full network of people in other networks.
And
yeah, that is kind of, I mean, the point of the quarantine was so that we could trace things when they came up, but that didn't happen.
Well, here they are. I mean, they did that from very early on, which didn't happen in the States at all, but they did that from very early on, tracing. And of course it's kind of out of control, but there's still this thing where everybody notifies everybody. And you always are hearing, oh, this person, and then they send, even if like you're like, okay, I contacted this person like 8 days ago, then you know you're going in for six days of quarantine or stuff like that. That so this tracking thing is also this thing that's manifesting as like part of the new life, the discourse and the practice of it. I mean, everybody's wearing masks. There's the funny thing of like if you're jogging, your mask should be on your elbow. Right? So you're signaling that it's there, but it's not actually there. And then, you know, people sit in restaurants, like packed outdoor restaurants.
Yeah.
And when you're in a restaurant, you don't need a mask on, right? So it's just like, how does this make? Although, you know, being outside, I think, I think it makes sense here also because people have spend so much time outdoors just as a culture, because it's often so warm here, that I think that that's just going to be helpful in the long run, is people are used to being outside a lot. Everybody has a balcony, or, you know, like, people are very comfortable on stoops and curbs and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there seems to be some differences of opinion in terms of wearing a mask and being outside and the risk involved in that. And I having not been in the city for most of this, but being here now, I'm definitely one of those, you should have a mask on if you're around people, even 6 feet away.
Mm-hmm.
But the restaurant thing is really boggles my mind.
You're not sitting 6 feet at all away from one another, and you're sitting there for a long time, and you're not moving. So it's like, it's more than 15 minutes of contact, and it's not in motion, and you're just sitting and chatting, and you're close, and you're allowed to not have your mask on.
Right. And, you know, you're on the sidewalk and people are walking past you and
running
past you without masks on, what have you. It's that, yeah. That really.
I've come to the place where I feel like if you're moving quickly past somebody, I feel like it's okay. That's my illogical point of arrival.
I cannot imagine running or biking with a mask on, so I'm a little forgiving of that dynamic.
Right.
But it's like, when people don't really move away, I'm like, you could just take a, you're literally running, so maybe run a step away. You can engage your body that way. What's going on in terms of your body and making stuff?
Oh, let's see. My body. My body's been very active since the beginning of this business. So all kinds of cultivating all kinds of practices of walking and biking. When I was in New York, I started to run a lot, and then a bunch of kind of class, not really classes, but kind of dance practices and yoga practices indoors. And that, it's been more about my access to nature for the first 4 weeks that I've been here. So a lot of just kind of walk out the door and walk up the many hills or down many roads. So, a lot of that, which is great. I actually have an access to a dance studio here when I'm up north. And so, you know, the funny thing is, Jeremy, as I was there dancing around, and they came into the studio, the people that run the office, and they were like, we're going to have a dance summer course on Thursday. Can you teach them? I end up teaching 40 dance students in a studio, nobody with a mask on. This is like, you would take a snapshot, you would think it was a different time. This is like, you know.
Oh, yeah. My God. And you were like, I can't resist. I have to teach it.
Yeah. I mean, it was not 40 at a time. It was 20 at a time. But suffice it to say, I had contact with like 40 teenagers in one day. It's weird. You just get caught up in like how everybody's behaving, and then you normalize to it. So once I've gotten to Tel Aviv, I have a little body practice involving going to be in the ocean, which is wonderful. Today I did yoga on the, we have a little balcony here.
Okay, by the ocean, do you mean the Mediterranean?
I sure do. The temperature of which is like an ocean. Oh, I'm sorry. I meant the sea.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Because that was me being lame.
No, it was a.
It's almost 1 a.m. here. I have an excuse.
But that's not, it's not a normal thing to call it the ocean.
I think I learned late in life the difference between the sea and the ocean, because I grew up here and I didn't ever think there was another thing. I just thought there was just the Mediterranean.
Well, it's incredible. It is like a weird combination. It's tremendous. Swimming in Tel Aviv was like one of the most amazing experiences.
It's so good. I mean, the temperature, you don't have to like wince when you come in, because it's just cool enough to make you not feel like hot. But then once you're in there, you don't need to leave because you're getting cold. You can stay for hours. And today the waves were so chill. It was just, oh, so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a spirit saving.
And, you know, in terms of like, not my body practice, but in terms of like dance practice, another thing that's going to boggle your mind is I was going to meet Ophir, who you have interviewed for this podcast in the beginning of this thing, the first round of this, my good friend. And he said, okay, you know, let's meet for coffee or whatever, blah, 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 in the Suzanne Dalal Center for Dance, which is actually where I was supposed to have the, you know, the Israel premiere of Paramodernities in a week. Of course, that's not happening. So he's like coming to me for coffee there. And I was like, so what are you doing there? He was like, oh, I'm seeing this. There's a showing of Solos. Actually, you should come. So I end up going. I'm in a studio theater in Tzitzit. And there's like all the who and the who, the Israeli dance, you know, pedagogy, sitting there watching these like final graduation solos from this like kind of high-end conservatory. Like, oh, I'm watching a live dance performance in a studio with people. What's happening? So, you know what I mean? This is why there's a surge in cases, because people are just like, yeah.
These things happen within an economy where like you feel like you have to do it in a way. Maybe like I have to like teach this class. Maybe I have to, you know. Is this what's happening? Okay.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
And that part really spooks me out.
Yeah. I mean, I think the fact that there's just so many variables, so many unknowns, and we have to care for our spirits and our bodies and our social fabric. We can't lose sight of that aspect of our health. I think that has rung true for me from the very beginning. And it seems to be what's, you know, dominating the behavior of the people in this country. You know, it's very important to them to engage the way they're used to. And yeah, so, and you're right. People follow kind of the herd if you know.
Yeah, and especially if it encourages what they want to do.
Yeah.
Against their maybe better thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why the rules in the beginning were so intense here, because the people that are supposed to organize the people in this country, you know, I don't know, the politicians, the scientists, whatever, who is in charge of making kind of like making sense of this, they know who they're dealing with, you know.
Right.
In New York, we didn't need somebody to tell us, don't do this, and this. Don't leave your house. Don't do that. We kind of did, but we didn't. We could do whatever we wanted.
Well, we sort of did need the governor to be like, theaters need to close, you know. And Trump was completely unwilling to do anything.
Right, but here they had fines from, or they really had fines. Like, I mean, if you walk down the street right now with a mask on your chin, not over your mouth, the cop will go by and he'll honk at you, and you might get a fine. And they report in the newspaper how many people are getting fined. So they try to enforce it. In New York, I feel like, you know.
Yeah, I don't think in general what I've seen is, you know, politicians basically saying they don't want to actually like enforce these things. They want people to just follow the mandates, which I think that's sort of correct if it works.
Yeah, and what I'm saying is I think in the States in general, like, Americans are better at following rules. You know, I always thought the Germans were the uber rule followers, but the Israelis see Americans as very kind of inflexible and kind of bureaucratically inclined, or like, so that just manifests in kind of all different aspects of, kind of helps me make sense of myself more also in light of having lived in New York for so long. And like, oh, this is why I don't always make sense in the States, because I'm not really good at, you know, paying attention to what the authorities say to me.
The balancing trust is coming for you.
Exactly. Thank you.
What does the future look like? Are you planning on staying there as long as you can? Or?
So my flight was supposed to be today. So then I kept being like, I'm not gonna, you know, I don't know. And Delta has this thing where they just like let you change your flight without no cost. So David's going to go back tomorrow because he misses New York. I'm going to go back next week, and then we're going to hopefully get ourselves organized and come right back.
Oh, okay.
Like sublet our apartment and find a place here and get our shit organized and then come back.
Yeah.
Because I think I can, you know, not only can I have more life here, and by life I mean like people, community, family, beach. I think I can work here a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, you have access to an infrastructure of some kind there as well.
Yeah, and willingness. Yeah, I mean, there's willingness from the dancers in the city to get going, but there's no infrastructure. And
yeah, and New York has moved into phase four, but it has not. That has not included indoor performances or a restaurant. What have you? So
or rehearsals, like the rehearsals. Like I don't need to perform, but just to be able to create work and to be in the studio and to research. I mean, Ailey announced in an email that they won't be considering opening until 21.
Right.
I don't know.
And what about Princeton?
Yeah, so it was really interesting ride the past week because I had basically said to the dance department that I'm totally willing to do any and all components of teaching plus offering additional teaching and creative workshops or whatever in person because they're going to have part of their student body is going to be coming to the fall in the fall. And I said, I feel comfortable and I'm fine to, you know, have a test once a week as the new protocols are going to demand and whatever's necessary to actually be in a studio with your students. And that was, you know, exciting. And we were figuring out, they, you know, had a particular idea for me to create a work and all this. And then I just realized that it would be potentially being in New York exclusively for that one engagement with the students at Princeton. And there were really important kind of personal reasons for me to stay here right now, having to do with my parents and different things I don't want to get into. And I just said, okay, I think I might just say no, thank you. Wow, David really took all the light away.
It's like this is over.
No, he went into a different room and closed a different door. But so I'm going to be teaching from at Princeton just in remote.
Yeah.
Is what it is. Just is what it is.
Everyone knows how to do it now.
Yeah, you know, we had all these like training classes in June about how to do it better, which I really appreciated because I need to know how to do it better. But it's really hard for me to commit to mind and to body a practice if I'm not sure I'm going to need it, you know? So, you know, like I'm a good student if I'm really, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel like I have to cram right now and because they made the semester starting sooner. Uh-huh. So
is it ending sooner too then?
It's like ending Thanksgiving. Sooner, yes. I think exactly. Is it the same for Jack?
It's what it sounds like, yeah. Which I think is it's correct. That is the correct thing to do.
Is he going to be teaching in person?
He is insisting not to be teaching in person because he has a lung condition and... Yeah, Bart is trying to make it happen, and I get that, but I'm also like, that's...
For the whole student body?
I that's my assumption. That's my sense that I'm hearing.
I mean, David, for Emerson, they want the professors to come and teach half of the classes in person so that the students that are attending and are going to be experiencing a tiny increase in tuition are actually able to have some in-person engagement, but the faculty seems to be up in arms about it. So I don't know if it's settled yet, but he has a semester off. So,
oh, okay. Great.
It's enough to do. Yeah. That's why we're able to be here. Yeah. And you?
Well, being in New York for just like 2 weeks, I'm like, this is untenable.
What is untenable?
I can't believe people are living here. That's basically the feeling.
In the city?
It's crazy. I mean, I'm...
Why?
I am hypervigilant, you know, sort of for Jack as well, or with Jack.
Right.
In that way. But just being outside, we generally go for a walk for like 20 minutes, and it's just full rage at like what people are doing by the end of it. It's just like I can't deal with it.
Really?
It's
what are they doing? They all have masks on, I'm sure, right?
It's really just like a whole mix of like what people are doing and like the political dynamics and just feeling the whole world like not working out, you know? Like I see the other side. I understand that people are living here. You know, I'm not living here.
Mm-hmm.
We're not living here, so I don't think it's fair to expect people to be doing what I want them to be doing, really. There's a certain inconsiderate quality, selfishness, and you know, and everyone gets to do what they want. It basically is what it boils down to. Yeah. So
it's interesting. I think. Yeah. I mean, I think basically this thing of like, sorry, let me just stand up. The country versus the city. You know, when we got here like a week ago after spending 4 weeks in like countryside. Man, that was my first reaction for a while. Like, I could not believe that people were that close to me and that they were waiting in line in this tiny, tiny, hot, you know, store all on top of each other. I was like, this is crazy. And then one of the guys outside with all the fruit and the vegetables didn't have a mask on. And it was just full on like, blah. And then after 5 days here, I'm like, huh. It's just.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Not like I don't care, but like I guess this is how it is over here. So I have to like, you know, fall in line.
Yeah, and if we weren't sort of scheduled to not be here, I think we would have been forced to sort of settle into it.
Exactly.
And by now,
right?
But I've just been counting the days.
Really?
The undifferentiated days.
When do you go back?
This is Sunday. We'll be back up there on Thursday.
Okay.
We're just doing a 2 week ballpark quarantine.
Right.
So.
Right. But is, and then that's just can extend indefinitely?
Sort of, yeah. I mean, I am like doing some work in the city in the beginning of August, but which is still like conversations I need to have about how that's going to happen.
Like physical work?
Some like videography stuff. And it feels crazy. I'm just going to take it one step at a time and see how it goes.
Do you need to, are you able to enjoy being in the city and it's at all or no? Sounds like not so much.
It was really nice to come back to the apartment, but then was really sad feeling you can't have like the intimacies with people. It felt really sad to come back in that way.
I wonder how it's going to feel to us to come back next week.
Yeah, and you'll be here.
I mean, I'm curious. I mean, we'll see. I make plans, but I'm also like, what kind of attachment am I going to have to these plans? Not so much.
Yeah, I think that's the right mindset too, because the future is so unprecedented.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, thanks for talking.
Oh, thank you.
It's good.
Sorry, I didn't like record the first part.
It's okay. I think we have way too much anyway.
Yes, I know. So you're doing this with people in different parts of the world, like you did the first time.
Well, I was like, Jack Reed, why don't you just call one person? And they were like, So I'm like, I'll do one. I didn't tell them I was going to do this, but I was like, I'll do one. Mm-hmm. We'll have it, and then maybe they'll do other ones. Mm-hmm. We'll see. It's a real, like, everything is difficult to do.
Right.
It's just like everything's impossible.
Yeah.
But I think it's a good time to check in and see what's happening around the world.
I don't know if I was telling Ophia or you, just like how much I appreciated that one in terms of it made me feel like held in some way in the distress hearing from people all over the world. But I remember Ophiel just saying to me whenever I saw him that it was difficult because it was not a conversation. It was just talking into a phone. So maybe this will be a good idea to follow up with.
Yeah. Yeah, it's also it was a lot of the same story, which was not so expected. Mm-hmm. It was like, wow, this is dark.
Right.
Wow.
Right. Well, I'm not dark. I'm Silver. All like, hey.
I'm teaching classes. No big deal.
I'm terrible. What's happening? It's like politically incorrect to air any of this verbiage.
It's what's happening, you know?
It is. It's true. Yeah. I know.
I think we're just headed into more weirdness.
Yeah.
Well, have a good flight. Enjoy the rest of your time there.
Thanks, dude. Thanks. I'll harass you once I'm in the same time zone and we can connect more.
Great. Like I look forward to it.
Lighting situation.
Yeah. Day and night.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. Say hi to Jack.
Will do. Thank you again.
Bye. Thank you. Bye.